Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Again, this is Kamsa speaking. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate hanyamani sharire. Purport. Although Kamsa is described as a demon, he had good knowledge of the affairs of Atmatattva, the truth of the self. 5,000 years ago, there were kings like Kamsa, who is described as an asura, but he was better than modern politicians and diplomats who have no knowledge about Atmatattva. That's quite a statement, that our modern politicians and diplomats are worse than Kamsa. As stated in the Vedas, asango yayam purusha, the spirit soul has no connection with the changes of the material body. The body undergoes six changes: birth, growth, sustenance, byproducts, dwindling, and then annihilation. But the soul undergoes no such changes. Even after the annihilation of a particular bodily form, the original source of the bodily elements does not change. The living entity enjoys the material body, which appears and disappears, but the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, remain the same. The example given here is that pots and dolls are produced from the earth, and when broken or destroyed, they mingle with their original ingredients. In any case, the source of supply remains the same. As already discussed, the body is made according to the desires of the soul. The soul desires, and thus the body is formed. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 18:61, Ishvara sarvabhutanam rideshya arjunatistati, brahmayan sarvabhutani yantrudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Neither the supersoul, Paramatma, nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. The Atma does not undergo birth, death, or changes like the body. Therefore, a Vedic aphorism says, asango yayam purusha. It's the second time Prabhupada's quoted that in this purport. Although the soul is conditioned within this material world, he has no connections with the changes of the material body. Bhuvi bo mani bhutani yata yat yatyan payanticha nayam atma tataiteshu viprayeti yataivabhu. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate hanyamane shri re. So here Kamsa is preaching basic philosophy of you're not this body. He's saying, you, the body, are different. You, the soul, are different from the body. The body's changing, you don't change. The elements of the body come together and form your body, and then again they'll separate and they'll go back to their original state, and you remain as they are. So Kamsa was very good at knowing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We say that, right? Oh, they know the philosophy. So he knew the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Not only did he know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but he was apparently practicing some of the aspects of Krishna consciousness. He was practicing some sadhu sangha. Yeah, he had association with Vasudeva and Devaki. Is that pretty elevated association? What would you say? He was even in Devaki's family. Would you like to have them in your, as your family? Vasudeva and Devaki. He got to see Narad Muni, who generally is only visible to the demigods. And he even got to see Krishna. He even got to see Krishna. Got to see Durga Devi. I mean, so he was doing some sadhu sangha. He was even meditating on the Lord. We say always remember Krishna and never forget him. So I think it's Rupa Goswami who says the demons are better than he is because they're always meditating on the Lord. So we may be struggling even in our japa or in the kirtan or in the Bhagavatam class, what to speak of the rest of the day. We may be struggling to have our mind fixed upon Krishna. And Kamsa didn't struggle at all. In fact, he was trying to forget Krishna and he couldn't do it. Right? And the gopis complain about this to Uddhava. They say, we're trying to forget Krishna, but we can't. They say, maybe he's forgotten about us, but we cannot forget about him. So Kamsa was very expert at these things. But he's not a devotee. He's a demon. Is that interesting? He knows the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He has association with extremely exalted devotees. He also had association with Nanda Maharaj, Narada Muni. He couldn't stop thinking of Krishna, even if he tried. And still, he's a demon. Still, he's a demon. What makes us a devotee is a very interesting question. Of course, there was one time, I think it was Ridhananda Maharaj, wrote a poem, sent it to Prabhupada, where he talked about himself as a devotee, and Prabhupada said, no, that's very high. Try to be the servant of a devotee. Actually, when we discuss Manashiksha, we're going to be doing an introduction on Saturday morning, and then we're going to be doing in-depth a week from Friday. Yes, is that right? A week from Friday, we'll be doing in-depth with Manashiksha, and we'll be looking especially in verse 7 about thinking that we're a devotee. So what makes us a devotee? Interesting question. How do we become a devotee? You know, people ask all the time, well, when did you become a devotee? I'm not sure. Did I become a devotee yet? I mean, you can talk about physically. When did I join the Hare Krishna movement? When did I move into the ashram? Or when did I get initiated? Or when did I start chanting 16 rounds or something like that? But, when did you become a devotee? So let's see what philosophy Kamsa knows here and how this can maybe help us or not help us. So he's saying here that the soul is unchanging through the bodily changes, which reminds us of which verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Dehino smenyata dehe komaram yovanam jarat tata dehantaram praptir diras tatrat namuyate, which I think is one of the verses on your Gita walk. Yes, and then Prabhupada's quoting a Bhagavad Gita verse here. What verse is he quoting? Well, he quoted that in the purport, but in the verse, Srila Prabhupada stuck in. Nahanyate. Yeah, what's the whole verse? Najayate miyate vakadachin, nayam bhutva bhavitava nabuyaha, ajao nitra shasvacho yamparano, nahanyate hanyamane shrire. The body is changing, but I remain the same. So we all have an experience of this. Correct? Yes? I think we only have one baby in the temple room who is sleeping. She's sleeping. So all of us had baby bodies, but if you took a photograph of our baby bodies, and you took all these photographs, if we had a contest, Mahaprasadam contest, we have to do it tomorrow, I guess. So if we had a plate, you'd get a plate of Mahaprasadam if you could match all of the baby pictures with people's current body. It would be difficult, wouldn't it? Right? Plus, I don't think there's very many people here in their 80s or 90s. Kalangan is not here. But if you then could take a picture of us, in our 80s and 90s, of course, just at Rathiyatra, I was talking with Anuttama Prabhu, and someone came up to him and said, oh, is that your mother? I was like, oh, man. That would make me about 90. Hare Krishna. But if we could, put up, photographs of us as babies, and then at like 20 and at 90, and you tried to match all three pictures, would you be able to do that? Right? You ever looked at old photo albums that shows your grandparents when they were young? Right? I remember, right, look at these photo albums, seeing my grandparents when they got married. Wow, grandma looked like that? Right? I remember showing a devotee once, there was a picture in Back to Godhead of my family. I think I was 25. And I said, yeah, there's me and my family in Back to Godhead. And she said, where are you in that picture? But yet we're the same person. It's not just like you take the baby body and you blow it up like a balloon, It's changed. It's a different body, correct? It's a very different body. I mean, even scientifically, all the cells have changed, but it looks quite different. And our mind is also changed, hopefully, from when we were two. Yes? We hope so. We have a different way of processing the world, different way of understanding. And that also changed. You know, I know people who've changed their political party. Isn't it? People go from being conservative to liberal or liberal to conservative. They change their mentality. We talk about people getting radicalized. People can change their whole mentality. They can go from being a good citizen to being a criminal, from being a criminal to being a good citizen. And yet they're the same person. As Prabhupada would say, the mother will not come and say, you know, where's my baby? Where's my baby? I remember my father seeing me when I was in my 40s, and he said, oh, my baby. I said, Dad, I'm a grandma. He said, not to me. You're my baby. And he didn't say, where's my baby gone? Oh, no, my baby's died. She's gone. She's gone. He said, you're the same person. And conversely, when someone does die, the body's there, but we cry. Yeah. Right? First time I heard Prabhupada speak in the Vyasasan, he was talking about this, how we want to see God, but we can't even see the little piece of God. That's the soul. Yeah. So if you've ever seen anybody die or even seen an animal die, and, you know, the body's there. And yet, the person is gone. So when the body changes, we see the person is not gone. And when the person's gone, even though the body's not changing, we see that it's the person's not there. So very easy to understand that we're not this body. It's not a difficult thing to understand. You know, especially because we, the soul, Prabhupada says here, that neither the super soul Paramatma nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. And we especially feel this, you know, those of us who are beyond 20 years old, you especially feel this, that you just don't relate to the older body. It doesn't seem real. You don't feel like an old person. I remember one of my aunts saying this to me many, many years ago. This is before I joined the movement. She said, you know, I walk past a shop window and I notice my reflection. I think, well, who is that old lady? I don't know who she is. Similar things happen when people have sometimes out-of-body experiences, you know, or near-death experiences. And they'll leave their body and they're hovering above their body. And many times, you know, once they've come back into the body and they're describing the experience, they say they looked at this body, you know, hit by a car lying on the road, and they just think, oh, you know, he's in pretty bad shape. They don't identify with it at all. Someone should help that guy lying on the road. Yeah. So just a little introspection, we can understand we're not this body. Frankly, that's something we really don't need to read the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam to understand. Just a little introspection. I must be different from this body. You know, even those who say that all we are is a bunch of chemicals, you know, we're just some matter collided somehow in a primordial soup. An electrical charge came, you know, it became alive, and then it transformed into giraffes and orangutans and palm trees and people. But even people who have this kind of philosophy, they don't really live like that. They don't live as if emotions don't matter and personality doesn't matter and relationships don't matter. So we all know that. Now the question is then, well, why do we have a body? If I'm not this body, what am I doing in this body? And Prabhupada talks about here how the soul is enjoying the material body. I don't know about all of you, but I don't enjoy this material body very much. It's a prison. Yeah, it's a very interesting prison. We're each in a kind of solitary confinement, isn't it? And we can walk around in our prison cell. It's quite fascinating how the Lord's designed this prison. But we're definitely imprisoned. Each of our bodies can only do certain things, many things it can't do. I mean, I'd love to be able to just fly without an airplane, wouldn't you? When I was a kid in school, I wanted to be able to expand myself so that I could be in school and at the beach. Right? I didn't like, why can't I do that? You know, or become invisible. It was something I really wanted to do. And, you know, our bodies are limited. They're very limited, and they do all kinds of things that we don't particularly like. You know, the demigods, they don't sweat. They don't have to have washing machines. They perfectly digest all their food. You know. But even they have difficulty with their bodies. And then we're imprisoned on this earth with gravity. So many things. It doesn't seem like we're enjoying it very much. I only get a little pleasure out of it here and there. But why do we have this? So for that, we do have to go to the scriptures. And here we are told, Srila Prabhupada's telling us, we have this body by our own desire. We have this body by our own desire. He says, the body is made according to the desires of the soul desires, and thus the body is formed. So then, of course, we may say, well, you know, it doesn't seem to really match my desires. But this just means that we have very foolish desires. And we experience this in our ordinary life. We think we want something. We place an order for it. We get it. And then we say, why did I want this? Yes, has this happened to everybody? Right, so I give this example all the time. I had a professor in graduate school who said that when he was 19, he attended a seminar about how to become a school superintendent by the time you're 33. Usually people become a superintendent at 50 or so. Superintendent in America is you're in charge of a whole district of schools. You're in charge of many schools. So he took this seminar like Shastra, and he followed every single step that this man told him. And indeed, he became a school superintendent when he was 33. It worked. And then he told us, he said, I found that I didn't like being a school superintendent. Said the job was so stressful that my wife divorced me. Said I actually hated it, and then I realized what I really wanted to do all along was be a teacher, and I became a college professor. So this is our experience. We desire something, we work for it, and then when we get it, we go, bleh. Isn't that a fact many times? That doesn't mean that we didn't desire it. The fact that once we get it, we say, what did I want this for? You know, you want some big, grand home. This was somebody's home, yes? Imagine this being just your personal property. I read about some oil sheik that it cost him $250,000 per day to maintain his homes and planes and cars. Imagine being under that kind of pressure. So one may think, I want this beautiful home, and then you got to take care of it. And you may think, oh, why did I want it? Right? Sobri Muni, who married 50 women. You know, for most people, one woman is too much. And 50, you know, and then after a while, he said, why did I want this? So he wanted it, but once he got it, he said, why do I want it? So it doesn't mean we didn't want it, is my point. We are very capable of having foolish desires. It's not out of the range of our experience. We don't know what it really means. You can think of all the fairy tales that we read where people got wishes. You remember those? Some magical being comes and says, I'm going to grant you 3 wishes. And usually the third wish is to do what? What's usually the third wish? To undo the previous 2 wishes, yes. That's generally what the third wish is. We don't know what it means. We don't know what fulfilling our desires means materially. We don't really understand it. But still, it's by our desires. Our desires as exhibited, of course, by our actions. Not only our desires, but our desires by what we do. If you just say, I want to be a doctor, and you lie on the couch all day, you don't really want to be a doctor. Not very much. Does that make sense to everybody? If I say, oh, I'd love to speak fluent Sanskrit and Bengali, but I don't put any time into learning the languages, then you can say I desire it, but it's not very meaningful. So our desires as exhibited by our actions, that's what karma means. I have certain desires, I act according to those desires, and then I get certain reactions. Karna guna sangasya. Sadasad janma yonishu. That according to how I associate with the modes of nature, in my karma I get certain body. So once we understand that the principle is desire, and desire as exhibited by action, then we realize that we have agency. Because frankly, in this world, we often feel that we don't really have agency. We don't really have autonomy. We feel very forced. Isn't it a fact? Arjuna asks this question, why do I feel forced? And when we talk about Manashiksha, this is going to be when we get to verse 5 of Manashiksha. Why is it that we feel forced to do things against our own values, against our own ideals? We don't feel very free. Do we feel very free? Can we say, no, I don't want to get old, or no, I don't want to get sick, or I don't want to have to use the toilet? Or, I mean, you can say, I'm not going to eat for a day. It's hard to say, I'm not going to eat for a month. And after that, saying I'm not going to eat means I'm not going to live in this body anymore. If you want to live in this body, at a certain point you have to eat. You're forced. So it seems like we don't have agency. But here the Shastra is saying, no, you do. It really is up to you. It's really your choice. It's all of us, all of our choices. We are the architects of our own fortune. Yam vam vapi smam vam. We are deciding by what we think about, by what we desire, by what we do. We are deciding who we are. You know, actually, we'll also talk about that in Manashiksha in regards to sound. We're creating our future in terms of our actions, our sound, our thoughts, our desires at every moment. And we have a lot more control over these than we think. We really have a lot of control over what we desire, what we meditate on, and what we do. So then the question becomes, what should I desire? What is the best thing to desire? So in materialistic families, materialistic society, they say the best thing to desire is what? What should you desire? Well, happiness, yes, but in what form? Wealth? What else? Money, beauty, power. Family, society, right? Get a good education. Make sure it's from a top prestigious school. They're looking for what we call socioeconomic status. High education, high wealth, and a high status job. Right? It's like I talk to people, especially born in India. It's like you only have two or three occupations you can choose from, isn't it? Somehow the range of hundreds of thousands of occupations, it's just like doctor and IT specialist. You have to get a high-status job, and you have to make a lot of money, and you have to have a big home and a fancy car. And this is what you're told to desire. Is that correct? And those of us who are educated out in the world, this is how we were indoctrinated from day one. And especially if you watch the media, which now has become more and more and more pervasive and multifaceted. And when I was a little girl, there were 3 channels all in black and white and just live programming for 6 hours a day. And they're saying the same thing. Desire wealth, desire prestige, desire, a happy family life and some power and influence in the world. That's what you should desire. But we say, no, you should desire something else. Because even if you get all those things, to the people who have those things, are they all universally happy? Are they? Are all the rich, famous doctors and IT specialists with the BMW in the garage and a flat-screen TV in every room, are they all happy? Are the richest, most famous, most beautiful celebrities in the world, are they all happy? Are they? 90% of them even? I don't think so. So that can't be the right formula. If that's the right formula, then we would expect at least, we'll be charitable, at least 90% of the people who achieve them, we won't demand 100%, they should be happy. But they're not. We find, every day you can read in the scandal sheets how they have a drug problem, an alcohol problem, they're getting divorced. These are signs of unhappiness. They're in some kind of criminal activity. That's how we knew Hiranyakashipu was unhappy when he was held the whole universe. He was always intoxicated and he was always yelling at people for no reason. That's how you can tell somebody's not happy. So what should we desire? So you ready for something a little radical here? Is that all right? Can we be a little radical? Can we be a little controversial? Is that all right? Okay, good. All right. I had to ask Sri Dharma Prabhu. He was, you know, I had to check with him. So Prabhupada says here, this is what Prabhupada says. Neither the super soul, Paramatma, nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. We have, believe it or not, and we're getting more and more of a contingent of people who debate this, it's become a very controversial point, we have an original spiritual identity. I didn't think that was controversial 10 years ago, but anyway, it's become very controversial. And that's what we should desire. Now, how nice is that? We should desire to be who we are. We should desire to be who we really are. All of our problem is that I'm desiring to be somebody that I'm not. That's my problem. And all of these bodies are somebody that I'm not. It doesn't matter whether you have, you know, a brown or pink or purple body or a male body or a female body or a lizard body or an elephant body or a palm tree body. Those are all things that we are not. We should desire to be who we are. And we have an original spiritual identity. If we have an identity, if we have a personality, if we have a personality, what does personality mean? What does that mean if we say someone has a personality? What does that mean, personality? Any ideas? A certain character, yes? What does that mean? How would we define character and personality? Some thoughts? Views, likes and dislikes. A certain view on things, yes. Certain things you like, certain things you don't like. Just like Nanda Maharaj, he likes to wear what color? Green. He likes green. I'm sure he likes other colors too. I'm sure he sometimes wears other colors. But he really likes green. That's evidence of a personality. What else is evidence of a personality? Views, likes, dislikes, what else? Association. Who you want to associate with, who you are associated with. Because we define our personality a lot by have this relation to so-and-so. What else defines personality? Diet. Oh, what you like to eat. Yeah, what you like to eat. Actually, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he's feeding the devotees, he gives each of them their favorite preps. Krishna also does this when he's eating with the cowherd boys. He gives each of them what they particularly like to eat. You know, one time at a festival, I said to a devotee, "This is wonderful, prasadam." And she said, "All prasadam is nice, prasadam." I said, "Well, okay." Not going to compliment the prasadam to you anymore. But we all have, you know, particular tastes. One person really likes gulab jamuns, another person doesn't. Yeah. What else is evidence of personality? What? Opinion. Like views. Yeah, you have a certain opinion on things. Are there different opinions in the spiritual world about how to serve Krishna? Yes, there are. Some of the gopis say Krishna likes it when you argue with him. And the other gopis say, no, Krishna doesn't like it when you argue with him. You can argue a little bit, but not so much. You're arguing too much. No, Krishna likes it when we argue a lot. So there's different opinions. There's different views. And also there's natures, like if someone's outgoing or they're shy, right? Or they're very serious or they're very joking, correct? Right? Everything we call personality in this world exists in some spiritual form. So we have an original spiritual identity. We have an original spiritual personality. Now, if we have an original spiritual personality, if it's spiritual, that means it must be in relation to Krishna. Now, I don't know why this is such a radical, controversial idea, but it seems to have become that. So those of you who know the Chaturasloka, we were just recently teaching Chaturasloka in Denver. So in the second verse, Krishna says, whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So if something is of value without relationship to Krishna, then that is the definition of illusion. That's the definition of Maya. Something that appears valuable outside of a relationship with Krishna. Therefore, our original spiritual identity must be in relationship to Krishna. Is that good logic? Does that work for everybody? So that's what we should be desiring. We should be desiring to find out who we are. Who we always have been from the beginning and who we always will be. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Our spiritual identity is not something that we're developing, you know, we're creating through our sadhana. It is something we are awakening through our sadhana. It is something we are discovering through our sadhana. And that's what we should be desiring. When we have that desire, then we no longer have to take on these changing false bodies. Then we will manifest our original spiritual form. At which point we will be not only just completely satisfied, unlimitedly, ever expandingly satisfied. Because it's who we really are and who we really want to be. And there's no disappointment in that desire. So Kamsa's not doing that. He's not doing that. He's not taking the step from, I understand I'm not this body. I understand that I'm having these bodies by my desires. I understand that there's some, the material nature is changing, but I'm not changing. Therefore, I should desire my original relationship with Krishna in loving service. He doesn't take that step. In fact, he's fighting Krishna, quite literally so. So, my dear friends, we can also adhere to this philosophy and be fighting Krishna. It is possible. It is entirely possible. We can be in this movement ostensibly. We can work out how to put the pleats in our cloth and keep it from falling off. Right? First time I ever put on a sari. As soon as I started dancing in the kirtan, it started like Draupadi's sari on the floor. This little four-year-old girl looked up at me. So yeah, we can figure out that kind of thing and how to put on our tilak. I remember when Mahadudi Prabhu was in Soho, he'd always be, your tilak isn't quite perfect. Yeah, we can work out all of that. We can work out the lingo, you know, the pamho a gusp. I wonder if once we take over the world, that'll be how people say hello to each other, you know, instead of good morning. Pamho, gusp. You know, we can work out all that kind of stuff. We can work out, you know, even the humble talk. Oh, no, Prabhu, you know, I have no good qualities. You take the mat. You know, we can figure all that out. And we can still be fighting Krishna. We can still be resisting Krishna. We can be resisting giving Krishna our desires. Resisting giving Krishna our emotions. As I say, when we get into Manushiksha, we'll be going into this in depth. This particularly with verse 6 about bathing in donkey urine. That's everybody's favorite verse, by the way. So we can have this kind of dichotomy between what we know and what we're actually doing. what we're apparently doing externally, what we know intellectually, and what we're doing with our emotions and with our desires. But what does Krishna say in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita 12:9? He says, if you can't always be absorbed with love for me, then practice sadhana bhakti, and in this way develop a desire, icha. In this way develop a desire. As Prabhupada says here, the body is made according to the desires of the soul desires, and thus the body is formed. So the purpose of everything that we are doing, worshipping the deity, so beautifully the deities are worshipped here, cleaning the temple, chanting Hare Krishna, coming to the class, observing vows. Some of you are going to be observing some Dhrita Vritta today. The whole purpose is to change our desire and redirect our emotion. That is the purpose. And if we miss that, then although we may look good, we are really just Kamsa. Thank you very much. If anyone has questions or comments or additions, subtractions.